From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
My first guest tonight is Stacy Dietrich. You'll know her as an author, police officer, and her new book, Mary Jane's Grave, continues on with the exploits of Detective Sergeant C.C. Gallagher. And it's always nice to have Stacy Dietrich on the show with us to talk about the new book. It's I'm not going to say it's creepy, but it has to do with a graveyard and all this kind of stuff. But one has to wonder, how does a beat cop start writing books about Mary Jane's grave?
Oh, how funny, but good evening, Dana. You know, the grave is just a typical urban legend here where I live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you look at it, when you go to your webpage, and you look at the links are in the show notes, it's you're not making that part of it up. An urban legend, or is there some truth to it?
Well, I connected this urban... There's this area here called Pleasant Valley, and it's kind of famous, actually. It's got this huge mansion that's surrounded by this farm, and actually... Louis Bromfield, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, lived there. Friends with Hollywood's elite, they all visited Lauren Bacall and who did she marry? Humphrey Bogart.
Mm-hmm.
They got married there. There's, you know, servants' quarters all over the property, and you know, it's just a beautiful area. There was a murder there in the late 1890s of one of the servants. His daughter, actually. Her name was Celia Rose, and she ended up poisoning her entire family with arsenic. She took flypaper, soaked it in water, and put it on their cottage cheese, and killed off the whole family. It was like the crime of the century here.
Jeez.
So that part was actually real, and just a stone's throw down the road is, of course, Mount Olive Cemetery, which is the big legend of Mary Jane's grave, that the supposed witch is buried there.
Teenage hangouts, there's one in every community, including mine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
you know, as a deputy sheriff here, you know, we always responded to calls down there, and there were some pretty violent calls down there. And as I described in the book, there's one way in and one way out. You know, we're in the Appalachian foothills here. So, you know, it's very remote. There's rarely cell phone service there. We've had robberies, raids, just all kinds of stuff of curious people going down there at 3 o'clock in the morning and meeting up with, you know, thugs that decided to go down there as well and drink and, you know, rob who's ever coming at the time. So I actually had another book halfway done and was driving along Pleasant Valley on my way to work one night, and it just kind of hit me. I was like, oh God, I gotta do Mary Jane's grave. You know, it's such a huge story around here. I get emails actually from all over the world, people that are even living abroad in Europe or whatnot that had grown up here, and everybody knew about Mary Jane's grave. So it's kind of cool.
Tell us about the heroine, Detective Sergeant C.C. Gallagher.
C.C. is just her own person. And, you know, these books are, and I know people get the impression they're thrillers. They are thrillers, but they're mainly romantic suspense. So I need to put that out there. I've gotten a few emails that said, what's all this romance stuff? Well, you know, they're romantic suspense. So, you know, it may not appeal to the male readers, but it's a chick thriller. Does that make sense? For the girls out there.
No,
and, you know, she is just this very strong, hard nose, comes across as a complete, you know, bitch. But, you know, that's her forefront. But, you know, underneath all those layers there, she's kind of a mess. She's got all kinds of stuff going on. You know, this little subplot of her marriage. And what people don't understand is, unfortunately, thankfully I haven't had to experience that, but I've, you know, seen many, many officers, male and female. Believe it or not, you know, this is the kind of stuff that goes on in law enforcement. And I've always said my motto is that marriages in law enforcement make Hollywood look like the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on there. And it's actually what goes on in her interpersonal relationships is very common.
I was going to say typical cop.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a special kind of lady or a special kind of man to be married to a police officer. And when police officers are married to each other, that takes real special people, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. The book itself, there's a link in the show notes on how to pick it up from Amazon, and you can go to stacydietrich.com. There's all sorts of links there. Where are we going with this? This is something where you called it a chick thriller. I don't know if I'd agree with that. I think it's a thriller. Yeah, you want to pick it up. There's an interesting story to it. But I want to stick with the heroine here a little bit, the detective. Typical cop. She doesn't believe in all this mumbo-jumbo graves and ghosts and all that kind of crap. But she's out there doing her job anyway. Let's tie that into this.
Well, that's the thing, and I get so many people going, you know, especially people that know me. They're like, oh, and they talk to me about the book. They always say, oh, when you went to the grave and you did this, and I have to keep telling them, you know, Cece Gallagher is not Stacy Dietrich.
Are you sure?
I believe you me. That I would get out of my warm bed at 3 a.m. and drive to this grave that actually terrifies me,
mm-hmm.
You're out of your mind. It's not going to happen. I don't do things like that. And, you know, she's fearless. I have fear. And, you know, a lot, her background, yes, was based on my own personal life, you know, coming from a family of cops and whatnot. And, you know, her responses to things, you know, her verbal responses to things, you know, obviously as an author, when I'm writing these, I would think to myself, you know, what would I respond to that as, you know? And the first book, which was Murder Mountain, which hasn't come out yet, I think they're going to put that out down the road as a prequel. Yeah, a lot of her was based on me, but it's so weird to write fiction because as you do it, and this sounds strange, but these characters tend to become their own people.
Mm-hmm.
They do evolve, and she has kind of become her own person. You know, the next book after this, The Body Mafia, I'm just really proud of that book. The romance, not a lot in there at all. And some things that happen, I've actually had some people read the manuscript on some of the stuff that happens, and they're like, wow, you nailed that as far as emotions go. And I love to hear stuff like that. But she's not me. She really is, you know, based on me. But like I said, she does things, you know, in the last book, The Devil's Closet, clearly, you know, she'd be looking at how many indictments by now. But, you know, it's fiction, so you gotta, you know, I when I wrote that book, you know, it poses the question, how far would you go to save a child?
Yeah.
Would you break the law? Would you put your career and your kids and your life on the line basically to save a child? Would you go that far? You know, it's kind of a disturbing thought, but with her, I took it all the way.
You know, you call them chick thrillers. It's more like real life, though, isn't it? Yeah, there's little subplots and the twisted life of a police officer. You have to be a police officer to understand what I mean when I say twisted life, because it is. But there's a lot of real life in these books, is there not?
There is. And I got to tell you, I know you've got Robin on later, and I was whining to her. I got an email today about someone wrote me that said, you know, her kids in these books are like come last, and that's so unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's not. Not that my kids come last by any means. No. My kids are my first priority. But when you're in the realm of a detective, and I can, you know, testify to the fact that when I was pregnant with my second daughter, miserably 7-8 months pregnant, miserable, and was so tired. And at midnight, you know, get called up to a children's hospital for a shaken baby. I ended up working on that for 36 hours straight. You know, and my oldest daughter, who was like 5 at the time, was home alone and didn't see me for 2 days. And, you know, you have to work. You have to pay the bills. And to keep your position as a detective, you've got to work hard and you've got to do a damn good job.
Right.
And sometimes those things happen. They really do happen like that. Sometimes the job does take a lot of your time, and it's very unfortunate, which is, you know, one of the reasons that I started writing in the first place. It was always my goal. I just really wanted to find something that I could do to where I could stay home and actually stay home with my kids, because I was on afternoon shift for so many years, and I never saw my kids. I missed soccer games. I missed plays and school productions for years. I think my oldest daughter was 8 the first time I ever took her to see fireworks. And, of course, my husband's on night shift. We'd pass each other literally going to work, waving. We would. We'd wave out the window, hey, you know, see you next week on our days off.
Yeah.
And it got to be too much. You know, they're only little ones. And, you know, so that pushed me that much harder to do all my writing and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be CC.
Well, it totally makes sense, kind of. One of the reasons why I do what I do on this radio station, because if you don't put away the police persona now and then, you'll go crazy, because you can't wear that badge and that uniform 24/7. It just doesn't work. You have to be human somewhat.
Right. Absolutely have to be human. And I see so many people where, and I know you do the same where you're at, there's just a certain personality. There's a certain cop out there, and I've worked with so many of them where they are completely and utterly 24/7 consumed by the job. And it's just, I got to a point where I was like that once, and I had to take a step back and say, you know what, this is a job.
Yep.
And I have a family, and this is 8 hours or 12 hours or whatever you cut it, and getting a paycheck and helping people during that time. But when I go home, you know, this is what's most important. And there are people, cops out there, that don't ever make that connection. Their job as a cop is their life. And those are the ones that are going through 5-6 divorces and girlfriends on the side and 10 kids from 5 different mothers. And, you know, they're out there. And I think it's sad.
Well, I tell you, Stacy Dietrich is here. We're talking about her new book, Mary Jane's Grave. Just check on the link on the show notes on how to purchase it. You watch much TV?
You know what? I don't. And I get yelled at. People are like, oh, did you see the show? And I'm like, what show is that? They're like, it's the number one show. And I'm like, you know what? With my kids, I watch, there's been a couple shows that I've kind of been hooked on. Obviously, The Shield. Was one I followed and ended up missing last season. And I actually, you know, I'm a traitor here, but I love Rescue Me. And I love that show. But really, I don't follow much television, because when I'm, you know, not with kids or whatnot, I'm, you know, sealed off in my office working. So, and when we do sit down, my husband and I this night find ourselves with no kids for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And when we're alone like that, we'll watch movies. So it's not like I get to, you know, actually follow any type of series.
Well, I've been asked a few times to comment on this Southland show. And I
saw ads for that, but I've never watched it.
I caught it for the first time the other night, and you and I will talk about that again on another show. I'm curious your thoughts on it, because there's a lot of good shows, and a lot of bad cop shows, and this one I'm not sure, but we'll talk about that later.
You know, back in the day, I don't know if anybody remembers this, and I really liked the show. Remember Third Watch?
Ah, yes.
I'm not a big fan of cop shows.
Yep.
And you know why. You know, because most of them are so unrealistic.
Yep.
And it makes me grit my teeth when I watch them, so I don't watch them. But, you know, The Shield, their conversations inside the police department. Watching that show, I thought, God, they've got some good writers, you know, that are obviously ex-cops.
Well, Southland is trying to pattern itself around Third Watch a little bit. Around
really?
And as an author, when I say the name Joseph Wamba, you'll recognize that.
Yes.
And around some of the old Joseph Wamba movies and books, but only time will tell. While I've got you here for the next 10 minutes or so, we would be remiss if we didn't discuss my next guest and his attorney, Drew Peterson. Joel Brodsky will be here right after you. Drew, who says hi, by the way, to everyone, is currently in custody.
Give him my regards.
Yes, is currently in custody.
Yes.
We've seen the perp walk with the look at the bling and the three squares a day and all that sort of stuff. Joel Brodsky will say that's Drew being Drew. Now the prosecution has come out and have talked about him wanting to hire a hitman for $25,000, and I'll get into that more with his lawyer, but I'm curious your thoughts on the disgraced former, and I'll say that again, disgraced former police officer Drew Peterson.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on that. As you know, I have my first true crime book coming out this fall, which is Murder Behind the Badge, and it's a compilation of police officers like Drew that have been convicted of murder.
Yep.
And these aren't questionable on-duty shootings. These are, you know, cold-blooded people like Bobby Cutts, you know, who killed his pregnant girlfriend. Craig Pyer, the former California state trooper, who pulls a woman over to write her ticket and ultimately, you know, kills her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are very deranged people. And in doing that book, one little tip is that, you know, Florida's first known serial killer was Gerard Schaefer.
Right.
And Gerard Schaefer was a police officer when he was committing these murders, which just kind of blew my mind. And the thing with these guys that I noticed the pattern across most of them is so many red flags came up in the hiring process, how they made it through the backgrounds and getting the, you know, job offers to begin with kind of blew my mind a little bit, because there was, I have done so many background investigations, and, you know, these were just huge red flags where you're like, no, we're not hiring you. But they got hired anyway. I'm not familiar with Drew's, you know, when he got hired or any problems there. But, you know, it's very difficult, and, you know, I'm trying to be kind here, and, you know...
you don't have to be.
Justice interrupted, and, you know, Joel has been, you know, he was on our show, he was nothing but nice to me.
Yep.
So, but as a defense attorney, I just don't see... Boy, that's tough. How you're going to have this defense, you know? Who has two wives that just, boom... You know, and the evidence is there. I know they just recently pulled the body out of the river. I'm really curious to see what turns up with that. And I'm curious to see what Drew's thoughts are on that. And, you know, what was his response when they said, you know, hey, we just pulled this body out of this river, you know, in this particular area. And, you know, I think he's guilty. I think he's guilty 100%. I think a jury's going to find him guilty 100%. I think that the officers involved in the Kathleen Savio case that responded, I think they should be held accountable. I think that coroner should be held accountable. You know, I get asked so many times about the Murder Behind the Badge book. You know, what do your coworkers and fellow officers think about you portraying these cops in a bad light? And I said, they don't care, because none of us like bad cops. It makes us all look bad. That is what makes our jobs tougher every day. So, hey, to weed these guys out, we're more than happy to do that. You know what I'm saying? And, Drew, I just, to me, it's fighting a losing battle as far as the defense goes.
It's going to be interesting, and I totally agree with you on all points. And I want to make that very clear that I do agree with you on all points. This will be... I'm not going to call it the trial of the century, but the media is going to be all over this like a bird on a bug. And it's going to be something where what Drew Peterson has said, even as most recently on the Today Show while he's in custody, to every show he's been on, including mine, coming back and haunting him in the strategy of an attorney like Joel Brodsky. But you, the good cop that you are, you've already answered my question that I was going to ask, what other officers think about you writing about bad officers. And good for you, because the good ones don't care. In fact, they want you to do that. And I'm not sure if you saw the most recent example of a beating in Alabama, I believe. It was
I saw that.
Yeah, it was a high-speed pursuit thing. Yes, there was an officer almost killed, and you have to be involved in a situation like that to know what the adrenaline is doing to you.
Well, and here's the thing with that, and I will get slammed for this, and I'm anticipating it when it comes out of my mouth every which way, but I have been almost in that exact same position. We had a pursuit, fellow deputies of mine, their mother owned this little mom-and-pop grocery store just in the hood, 70-year-old woman, and a guy came in and just broke her jaw and robbed her. Mm-hmm. You know, these are cops' mom.
Yep.
And we ended up in a 35-mile pursuit of speeds at 100 to 120 miles an hour, and he tried to run cops over, and I know I was, you know, one of the lead cruisers there, and I wanted, all I kept thinking of is, if this guy stops, I just want to crack his head open. I was furious, and my adrenaline was just, our own county sheriff was even in this pursuit, which you never see, you know, them leave their offices, and, but the thing that I didn't understand with the Alabama tape is, they didn't know he was unconscious. I'm going to defend the cops there. He's laying on his stomach with his hands underneath his chest. I saw the video. They didn't know he was unconscious. For them to run up like that, to me, was just poor officer safety. As angry as I would have been, I would have immediately screamed at him at gunpoint, because who's to say that he's not, you know, curled up like that with a gun under his chest? And then to be, and here's where I'm going to get hammered on, but to be stupid enough to do that when you know that every car is equipped with an in-car camera.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the thing. These guys that do that, and you're like, you know you've got in-car cameras. I mean, how stupid can you be?
Yep. And you know, we can be proud and say, you know, you take the higher stand when you're a police officer, but being in a situation like that once, and the adrenaline is pumping, and your nerves are pumping, and you're ready to do something, to take some sort of action. I've been there, done that too, but you got to let your common sense take over a little bit.
I mean, you do. You've got to, and I'll tell you, the specific pursuit I was talking about, he ended up rolling it, and he was crawling out the window, so he was conscious and whatnot. And, you know, as much as we wanted to run up there and just rip this guy's face off, you know, you got to take a step back and take a breath. And you know what? And mostly, I hate, you know, this is officer safety.
Yep.
I'm not going to run right up there. I mean, the guy brandished a gun, and you know he's armed. But like these guys, again, I'm going to give that aspect to the cops. There's no way they would have known he was unconscious.
No. Oh, I agree with you.
And the way he was laying, he had his arms tucked under. If I, that would have been me, my first thought would have been undercover, screaming orders at gunpoint, and then when he's not moving, you're going to slowly up on him, and you know, but to run right up like that, to me, was just in poor taste officer safety, and obviously, you know, poor taste all around. And you know, those guys were stupid. They were absolutely stupid.
Absolutely. And dangerous. You know, they say it's 95% boredom and 5% sure adrenaline, but the book that I want you all to go out and buy and go to the website, the show notes, is called Mary Jane's Grave, and my guest Stacy Dietrich is always welcome. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Dana. You have a good evening and have a great holiday.
You enjoy your night alone with no kids around.
Believe me, I am. Thank you.
You and hubby will fall asleep in about 5 minutes, I'm sure.
No, it's not happening.
Okay, all right. See ya.
But thank you. You have a good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Stacy Dietrich, and again, the book is Mary Jane's Grave. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Joel Brodsky is the attorney for Drew Peterson. He is on the line with me right now. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
Good. I assume you've been very busy the last little while.
I think the first thing I said to myself when I found out that Drew was arrested was, well, there goes my summer.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something you and I have talked about. In fact, Drew has talked about in this program many, many times that if there was an arrest, keyword if there was a contingency plan and the arrest has happened, there's been plenty of this in the media. Three things that I want to talk to you about. First of all, when you were on the show last time, you were going to talk about what you believe the excessive bond. Where did that go?
Yeah, the bond. Well, we made a motion to reduce bond, and the judge denied it. We are a new judge. It seems that the biggest part, we're spending a lot of time trying to figure out what judge we should be able to get, and it's unfortunate, but we'd like to have all judges be equally as good and equally as fair, but that's not how real life is. She denied it, so now we're preparing an appeal. In Illinois, we can take an immediate appeal of a refusal to modify or lower a bond, and the appellate court reviews it de novo. That means that's Latin for like new. So they can substitute their judgment for that of the trial judge, and it's kind of like getting a second bite at the apple. And we'll see what the appellate court does. Now, if the appellate court says the $20 million bond stands, then I guess the $20 million bond is going to stand. And if they lower it, we'll have to see.
I'm going to back up for a second and then go forward. The judge issue, the media has been all over the fact that the prosecution made a motion to change judges, saying the judge was prejudicial to them. You don't hear that too often. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that was quite a surprise. Judge Shainstead, who heard the weapons charge and also ordered the property returned to Drew, is on a reputation in Will County and beyond as being an extremely fair, a very thoughtful judge, you know, even-handed. He didn't, believe me, he did not rule all in our favor. We got ruled against plenty by him or in procedural things. He certainly wasn't, you know, pro one side or the other. And he's a chief judge of the criminal division of that county, and for the state's attorney to say that he's prejudiced was quite shocking, but he did. And now we have two changes of judges that we can do. And trying to decide whether or not we want to exercise those. You know, it's one of those things, once it's done, it's done. There's an old saying, if you try to assassinate the king, you better not miss. we hate to, ask for a change of judges and get somebody who's a little less lenient. So it's a big decision.
That part is fascinating. And getting back to the high bond, even the pundits, the TV pundits who have been against you and Drew right from the beginning, who have tried not to stay neutral, in fact, who have been very anti-Drew Peterson, say that that's very unusual to have such a high bond. And what was the argument to keep it so high?
Well, I mean, I think Glasgow, the state attorney, was saying that it was needed because, you know, Drew is a police officer, had violated his oath to protect the public, that he was as an undercover narcotics agent, he was has the ability and the knowledge of how to hide himself, all of which obviously presumes he's guilty. You know, I mean, it doesn't, a $20 million bond is a bond that very, very few people can make. It's in effect, a denial of bond. And we're going to appeal on the grounds that, look, if you're going to say he deserves a bond, you know, and he's not a no bond, which you can get in certain cases, but he qualifies for a bond, then you have to give him a reasonable bond, a bond that he can potentially make. Maybe it, you know, takes every penny he has, but at least one he can make. I think this case law supports us on this argument, but, you know, there's a lot of emotion, especially in Will County, Illinois, about this case, and I just don't know how much the emotion is going to over, even the judges, is going to override, you know, how, what should be done.
Will you be looking for a change of venue?
Well, certainly when the jury is picked. I think it's pretty obvious, though. We're going to have to look for a jury outside of Northern Illinois to try to try this case. Then again, there's other issues that by law, the jury has to come from Illinois. So do we want a jury from, you know, some very rural county downstate, that's you know, maybe that's not where we want to go. Do we want to go to places like East St. Louis? That's very, you know, it's coming to a lot of very poor people in that area. That do we want to go there? I mean, do we want to go to some suburb, southern suburb of Chicago? There's, it's just going to be a, I think what I'm trying to say is every single step in this case from now on is going to be hard fought, and yep. it's going to be very difficult decisions. I don't see anything going easy in this case. And the state attorney is going to fight us tooth and nail. So we're just going to have to move forward as slowly and as intelligently as we can.
Joel Brodsky's here, attorney for Drew Peterson. Joel, when you're watching, and I'm not sure if you were watching, some will call it the perp walk, Drew is playing with the media, your reaction to that. And I know, I think I know what your reaction and your comment will be.
Well, yeah, you've talked to Drew several times,
yep.
and we've been over this. That was just his way of dealing with a very, you know, stressful and unpleasant situation. That's what he does. I mean, I asked him afterwards. We were up in the courtroom, and I said, "Where did that come from?" And he says, "I don't know. It just came out. I, you know, it wasn't even voluntary."
Yeah.
And that's just his knee-jerk reaction to being put in a tight spot. Is to, you know, use humor and wisecracks. Probably inappropriate, but that's just his personality. And you know, I don't think that somebody should be found guilty or innocent, for that matter, simply because of their personality. They should, the case should be judged on the facts and the evidence, not on whether somebody acts appropriately or inappropriately. I mean, I have confidence in the jury system. I really think that juries try to work hard to do that. And I wish what the media would quit focusing on these actions and started focusing in on the evidence and the facts, or lack thereof, actually. And and quit getting away from, you know, Drew's antics. But
Has there been discussion, Joel, on televising the trial?
Well, we haven't had a televised trial in Illinois that I can remember. It would have to be approved by the Supreme Court. And I would hope that I wouldn't mind this case being televised. I think it would be a fascinating case to be televised. I mean, it's a circumstantial case. It's got a lot of witnesses with credibility issues. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting case to try. I think it'll be very educational too. There'll be a lot of forensic evidence, interesting forensic evidence about the dueling autopsies. But the Illinois Supreme Court would have to approve it, and I would hope that some larger media outlets would take a petition to the Illinois Supreme Court and ask for leave to televise it. And who knows how they'd rule? They haven't been asked in a long time. We have a new makeup of the Illinois Supreme Court. They may actually approve it.
Well, if there was a case that should be televised, because it's pretty much been televised anyway with all the media coverage, it might as well be this one.
Well, that's true.
Joel Brodsky is here, and Joel, the media reports of remains being found, a blue barrel. Immediately, the speculation went to Stacy Peterson. Your comments on that?
Yeah, unfortunately, and I know where this is. This area where the body was, where the remains were found, is where a major interstate running from Memphis, Tennessee, north through Chicago, crosses over the Des Plaines River. And unfortunately, bodies are recovered in that area, you know, every month or so. It's tragic comment on people, you know, destitute people or, you know, prostitutes and drug addicts and such. But just because it happened on the day that the grand jury in Drew's case terminated, I think that it's something more to do with the fact of the speculation that it was Stacy than the fact that a body was found around there. Because I was talking to one reporter, and she had told me that they had found in the 2 years that she had worked down in that area, that she had recalled 7 bodies being found just off that bridge, and that was just one reporter. So, you know, it doesn't concern us. I mean, the real point is, it doesn't concern us. We're very sure to positive that it's not going to have anything to do with Drew, And it's unfortunate that Stacy's family has to be put through this.
Exactly.
You know, it's got to be, you know, a lot of stress, you know, waiting for an autopsy result when there's really nothing special. There's nothing about this particular body that makes it any more likely than a body being found in Arizona that it belongs to Stacy.
Well, we can all agree that all families, including the Savio family and the Peterson, Stacy Peterson's family, deserve justice in some form. But your client also deserves a fair trial, and I think that's what's most important.
Absolutely. You know, it's a fair trial protects us not through Peterson, but it protects everybody. That anybody, even the most hated person in this country, can get a fair trial. Is what we want. I think that's what everybody wants. I mean, I can't imagine that there's people out there, I mean, I'm sure there are, but that fair-minded people out there are going to be saying, you know, we don't like this one particular guy, so let's not give him a fair trial. Because when you start down that slippery path and start saying, well, everybody deserves a fair trial except people I don't like, then we're on the road to fascism. And that's not a road we really want to be on, I don't think, anyway.
Joel Brodsky's here. Well, last question for you.
Sure.
The crime shows, Greta Van Susteren, Nancy Grace, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The pundits that come on and talking heads, whatever you want to call them, come on these shows, say that what will ultimately do Drew in is his comments to the media. I can't think of many times that Drew was on the media or in the media without you sitting right beside him. I can think of maybe one or two minor ones. Your thoughts on those comments from the talking heads?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly did, you know, went against the traditional manner here. I mean, the traditional thought is, the traditional model is, if you're under investigation, you don't see anything.
Right.
We decided that in such a high-profile case like this, that really doesn't apply. Because Drew had already made some comments, and we thought it was, you know, better to get out there and confront, you know, at every step of the way, you know, the misinformation that was being put out. I don't know. I guess the ultimate verdict in the draft of the trial is going to show who was right and who was wrong.
Right.
I guess we'll have to wait to see if I'm right, and I think I am, that in this case, the media exposure really helped rather than hurt, and helped diffuse some of the few comments he made earlier on, then I think we may have created a new model for defendant behavior in high-profile cases. But, I mean, I want to stress that in anything but high-profile cases, really defendants shouldn't talk, or not defendants, but, you know, suspects really shouldn't talk. This is a highly unusual situation. And so we use a different tactic, but it certainly isn't what should be normally done. And if people are in trouble or under investigation, go to a lawyer and don't say anything until after you've consulted with your attorney.
Absolutely. Joel Brodsky, thank you, sir. I'll stay in touch.
My pleasure, Dana. You take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Joel Brodsky, and it goes back to the old adage of being in a lawyer's office and seeing a fish mounted up on the wall. And this has been in several news stories with the a little placard underneath it, if I'd only kept my mouth shut. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be back with Deputy DA from Los Angeles County, Robin Sachs, with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs feature. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. Robin Sachs, ADA, out of Los Angeles County. She's an author. Her new book, Predators and Child Molesters, What Every Parent Needs to Know to Keep Kids Safe, is selling like hotcakes. And check out the link on the webpage. Welcome back, Robin. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. How about you?
I'm fine. Just had Joel Brodsky on the program, and we were talking about Drew Peterson. And one question I was going to ask, and then I held off because I knew what his response would be, and thought I would save it for you, is the revelation, the release, whatever you want to call it, from the district attorney down there in Will County, that Drew Peterson tried to hire a hitman. Evidence damning, absolutely, but was it smart for the DA to let that go, because if there's a credibility issue on this person, if it's whatever, it's out there, they know about it, and that's a huge part of this case, I believe.
Well, the credibility, obviously, is the name of the game when it comes to any sort of trial. For anyone, that, frankly, I mean, the evidence that anyone's presented with comes forth with credibility. I mean, if we look at some of the famous cases in history, we could see that they've been won and lost on credibility. Look at O.J. Simpson. You had all of the evidence in the world, but when you didn't have the DA's office and law enforcement acting in a way that the jurors got credible and having issues with the jurors as well, a whole case can be sacrificed. Something, you know, the leakage of this new piece of information, true, untrue, or whatever, is problematic to me at this stage in the game, only because until we know what direction that the DA's office is going to take with regard to Stacey Peterson, whether or not they're going to proceed in filing the case as a as a murder case without a body, if we're expecting to see an indictment, this, you know, hitman thing just kind of flies in the face of just media frenzy and undermines the credibility of the office at this point to me.
Yep, I agree with you 100%. And in fact, if anything, I would hope that this investigation is still going great guns into the Peterson, Stacey Peterson disappearance and other things, and it's just bad timing letting that out right now. And I know I talked to Joel about it off air, and he's actually rubbing his hands over it and smiling. I didn't talk to him about it on air, and he won't mind me saying this. I saved this one for you because I'm curious. Maybe nothing, but it's certainly something that when this does go to trial, who knows when, it? I believe it'll be a big part of it. A blog, a parenting blog, and an article called Keeping Children from Going Missing. Monday is National Missing Children's Day. And I'm going to just preface a little bit here. It says 800,000 children are reported missing every year. More than 2,000 children each day. Of that number, 200,000 are abducted by family members, and 58,000 are abducted by non-family members. And that was an interview that you did with the author of the story, Lisa Belkin, I believe. Let's talk about that, because I'm seeing a whole bunch of crazy comments on this blog.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is really fascinating. I never thought that, you know, safety, I kind of stay below the radar on the controversial issues when it comes to posting. I know, as you know, I'm part of the Women in Crime blog, and there are a lot of authors on my blog that write about cases, you know, the Drew Peterson and the, you know, all the other cases. And those, you know, I can understand the people getting really opinionated and crazy about, but I would have never expected so much controversy to be about protecting your children and some of the things that I mentioned as being so polarizing in terms of this article. But I kind of like it in a way, because it certainly does make people think, and it certainly then highlights why I wrote this book, because clearly, you know, educated people, smart people, these people who know how to read, know how to type, and people who, you know, peruse the New York Times, I'm sure, you know, represent a higher echelon of society and are critical thinkers and so forth. And yet there are people on this blog that, you know, one, who are questioning the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's statistics, which I understand that they come off and don't seem to make necessarily the crystal clear sense that we would like them to do. But if we were to just take the darn article at face value of a reminder that we need to do something instead of arguing the specifics, more people would probably, perhaps we would have less children who would be sexually abused and more people be coming forward, because if these kinds of people who are responding to this blog that scare the crap out of people from reporting, because it's with this criticism that that people get when they make reports to law enforcement or to the media or to the public and come out and share their stories, and I'm not even sharing any stories.
I've used the term several times, re-victimization, and it's whether it's just like you say, that prevents someone from coming forward with a disclosure, to whatever. And, you know, education is so important. We try to teach the people, but sometimes it's the people that are out there that just don't get it, that'll either argue about the numbers or they'll argue about something that just seems to be common sense. No matter, and I guessed it on your Justice Interrupter show last week, and I believe I said no matter what you do, don't ever get down for what you're doing, because you know that your voice is getting heard, and because there's the good people and the wackos that are responding, and it's just sad that when it comes to protecting children, you even see the wackos responding.
Oh, no, and the thing that I think is so troubling, I mean, there was one question or one point that I make in lots of speeches over and over again, and that is the point to take is for us to, you know, kind of put our worries about being politically correct and the appearance of being rude and stereotypical aside when we are dealing with matters of safety. So if you get that uh-oh feeling or oh shit feeling, depending on who's thinking, who's got the feeling, to just merely listen to those instincts and guts so that we can capitalize on our natural predator sensitivity that we have all innately in us as human beings. And yet there are still responses in here that saying, you know, if we listening to our instincts is what creates racism and creates stereotypical behaviors and prejudice and blah, 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 blah. And that's, you know, that may be true. And there may be issues, and there certainly is a balance to strike there. But let's see, at the end of the day, do I want to have my child to say, okay, well, I've never, ever, you know, made the wrong judgment, I've never, ever been stereotypical, but yet I've been molested and raped 20 times?
Yeah.
Or would we rather say, you know what, maybe I was stereotypical once, and maybe I was prejudicial once, and I acknowledge that, and I understand that wasn't right, but I'm safe.
You know, and there are those out there that will bring back the type of tennis shoes that you wear as a racist or a bigoted issue, and you just can't win no matter what you do. But it's nice to see blogs like this and magazines and papers, and I like the byline, Adventures in Parenting, because it is an adventure as a parent, but you can make it a good one, or you can make it a bad one, or you can put your blinders on and just ignore everything that's going on, and then all of a sudden there's a tragedy, you throw up your hands and you say you didn't know. That's where books like you have, where you prepare and you give some education out there, are such good things.
Well, and I appreciate that, but I think it's like anything else. I mean, we can always go back and retrospect. I mean, look at 9/11. Look at some of the biggest crimes in history and political issues in history, and we can all go back and say, oh, all the warning signals and all those signs were there and the symptoms were there, and oh, we would have known that, and oh, if we had just revealed that or listened to it or whatever. I would hate on my dime and on my watch in terms of being able to advocate on behalf of kids to let and allow parents to even have that as an excuse. I would rather parents be a little bit critical of me and critical maybe of themselves, but at least connect the dots before their kid becomes the statistic.
Turning topics a little bit, we'll go back to something we talked about last week. Tomorrow night on the Learning Channel, we'll all learn about what's really going on with John and Kate plus 8 and the bodyguard and the school teacher and any affairs that they're having. And every time I see that, and, you know, I have to be honest with you, I'm probably going to watch it. It just makes me shudder to say, you know, how much airtime are we wasting on something like this? And now I'm going to get into your radio show, what you do on Tuesday nights called Justice Interrupted, where there are stories after stories after stories after stories after stories that would, you know, love to have 5 minutes on any cable television channel or radio station or whatever, but we have to learn about the exploits of John and Kate and the paparazzi.
Well, and you didn't even know this, Dana, but I wrote an article that's going to be featured on a blog tomorrow on momlogic.com, which is actually a Warner Brothers site that I'm doing some quotes and offering some opinions for them. And it's a great blog, first of all, for parents. And but I've written an article about how to use the media and why people may want to seek the media when it comes to missing and abducted children in honor of National Children's
Right.
Day. That was kind of the take that I took. But like you, on Tuesday nights, I with Stacey Dietrich, who I know is on your show tonight, and Susan Murphy Milano, who has been on your show before, we do a radio show. And like you, we obviously emulate a lot of what you do here on, you know, Scared Monkeys, the whole team on Scared Monkeys and on the Dana Presser
show, and that is to bring awareness to those cases. And just, you know, we, you and I talk about this off air often, and really it is unbelievable that we are saturated with, you know, Paris Hilton's and, you know, Kate and whomever plus eight. I don't even know what his name is. I have know what he looks like.
Yeah.
And whatever the teacher that he's having an affair with, I do. I have been reading my people. I will admit to that. But, and all the other, you know, all the other stuff. And yet the media is such a powerful tool for those cases. And really the only people that we see doing the kind of stuff that we do are the Nancy Graces and the Jean Velez Mitchell and some Greta and some of those other folks. But frankly, they talk about the cases that everybody knows about and thus don't need the awareness. And so I really think, and I think that you would agree, and I think that there are many of your listeners would agree, and many of our listeners, that there has to be some lobbying efforts to, and some letters to editors and some blog articles written on the need for just the regular cases, the hundreds and thousands of cases that get reported every single day that merely stand on a stack on some detective's desk that need a little bit of media attention to put some pressure on the agencies to put the resources in the right places to investigate cases, to educate their communities, to make sure sentences are appropriate, because it is media attention. It is when people are watching that change happen.
You know,
you guys, everybody who's listening should be blogging and writing about the needs for this. I mean, I think it's disgraceful that Court TV is gone. It's sad. It's a sad statement of our country, and also it's a sad statement when you look at it compared to the statistics of crime that they're not going down. So something's amiss.
I hope that the Drew Peterson trial is broadcast on television. When I asked Joel Brodsky, he hopes it is too, even though the whole trial has been, well, the whole case has been a television staple. When you look at that, and this is my last question for this evening, when you look at that as a, you know, from the DA perspective, from the author perspective, or just as a citizen's perspective, should these trials be 24/7 on TV? Because Peterson, Casey Anthony, you name it, those kinds of cases, even though we don't get the Court TV coverage like we used to, the people sure want to see everything that's going on, including the boring motions and the sidebars and all this sort of stuff. They just thrive for it.
I think absolutely, but in addition to the trials that are being shown, that's one component. That those are the cases that are already being prosecuted or going through the various motions. But more importantly than that, frankly, I mean, that would be great, but we can get summaries. I think we need 24-hour programming on cases that are not yet within the, you know, the four walls of a courtroom, that are still laying on pieces of paper, the missing people who have been missing for years, the domestic violence cases, the child abuse cases, the stalking cases, the gang cases, the hate crime, the financial crimes, all of them. The cases, because honestly, you know it as a police officer, I know it as a DA, when people are watching, we do a better job.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is. And we're going to work harder, and we're going to make sure that we do what needs to be done, because if we can't do what we would do with comfort in front of a camera, then we shouldn't be doing it, or something's wrong.
Yep, you're right, and we need a brave producer, a brave network. We need somebody to step forward and say, the people want it, it's only right, let's do it. That's Robin Sachs. That's our weekly segment called Nothing But the Sachs. We'll see you again next week.
Absolutely. Have a good night, and happy Memorial Day.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, that's it. That's tonight's show. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, leave comments, whatever. And for all your blogging information, make sure to go to scaredmonkeys.com. We'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.